The city of Jacksonville gets hit with another lawsuit. Good morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross. This is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. And just ahead this hour, why local parents are suing the city over crumbling Duval County schools. You can join the conversation. Call us up. It's 549-2937. Then later, Culpepper breaks down the Jaguars' big win at home over the weekend against the Titans. But first this hour, a group of Duval County parents and grandparents are suing the city of Jacksonville for, they say, blocking the school board's proposed half-cent sales tax from appearing on voters' ballots this year. Jacksonville attorney Ted Delegal is representing the group of parents and grandparents in this lawsuit. He joins us now along with local parent Laura Heffernan. Good morning to both of you. Thanks for being here.
Good morning.
Good morning.
And what are your thoughts about this lawsuit? It's one of several the city is now facing after controversy over a sales tax vote for schools. At the heart of that controversy, how much money should go toward charter schools? What do you think about that? Give us a call. It's 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org and tweets to @MelissaInJax. All right, Tad Delegal, let's begin with you. This lawsuit representing several parents and grandparents aims to get the sales tax measure on the ballot. Tell us what's in the complaint.
Well, what we did is we were approached by a number of parents and voters who were concerned about the fact that the school board's proposed referendum was removed from the ballot. We filed an action that's mainly what's called a quo warranto lawsuit, which is a Latin term that basically asks by what authority. And it's our contention that the way the legislature drew up the ability to have this kind of sales tax referendum, and this is statewide, they've given the school board the ability to place this type of referendum on the ballot, and that we don't believe that the city council had the authority to remove this referendum from the ballot. And that's consistent with what the attorney general said, what two other circuit court judges have said in this circuit. So we believe that we are on good ground, and we're pursuing that claim.
Laura Heffernan, you're one of the parents taking part in this action. What motivated you to do it?
Well, I think, you know, like a lot of parents in the county, we were really excited in the spring of this year when Dr. Green and the school board came together finally to make this plan to fix the what's long overdue, which is, you know, so many of these schools in the county really should have been updated long ago and have just been waiting and waiting. And then I think, you know, our hearts started to sink over the summer as we watched the city council get involved. And by get involved, I really mean, you know, stall out and, you know, fail to put it on their agenda over and over again, and then, you know, sort of just basically prevent the entire thing from happening. A lot of us from my son's school went to the last city council meeting in August where they withdrew it, and the level of frustration among parents in the county is extremely high.
Tell us about your child's school.
My son goes to Fishweir Elementary School. He's a first grader. That's our neighborhood school. We walk down there every day, and we really love it. I mean, many of your listeners may know it. It's a very sweet building with a nice courtyard where the kids play. It's over 100 years old, so there are structural issues in the building. The fourth graders haven't been meeting in their classrooms at all this year because of those structural issues. Last year, the walls were held up by 2x4s in there. So they've been, you know, meeting in the media center and computer classrooms, and the teachers are handling all of this with incredible grace and fortitude. But, you know, this really needs to be taken care of.
It's 549-2937 as we talk about parents suing the city of Jacksonville. Do you think that the city should place that half-cent sales tax for schools on the ballot or not? What are your thoughts about this? 549-2937. Tad Delegal, you referenced a similar issue in Clay County, yes, where a judge ruled that the Clay County Commission can decide when such a type of measure can be placed before the voters, but not if. So how do you see that factoring into this complaint?
Well, we think that's the heart of this complaint. Judge Whittington evaluated the statutory structure, and he said, well, the county commission in that situation, city council in our situation in Jacksonville, has the right to evaluate what date would be appropriate for a referendum, has the obligations to reasonably schedule the referendum, but doesn't have the right to remove the referendum or remove the legislation. And that's what the city council here did. And we believe that since that power is not vested in the city council, that the court should order the city council to place it on the ballot at a reasonable time.
You're arguing that the city council has improperly overstepped its authority.
Right. And we're asking the court to interpret that authority.
And how do you anticipate the court to hear this complaint?
Well, we filed what's called a petition for quo warranto, also a petition for mandamus, which asked the court to evaluate the legal arguments, basically. It's a sort of a specialized type of lawsuit, and give the parties an opportunity to explain, the city to explain the legal reasons why it believes that the matter should not be forced to be on the ballot. And at that point, after that point, to rule on the issues and to make a determination as to whether it's mandatory.
Let me ask you both as well. Your complaint, which is similar to the one that the Duval County School Board has also filed against the city, doesn't get into the weeds of the controversy over this whole issue, which is a sharp disagreement in the community and among elected officials over how much of our sales tax dollars in Jacksonville should go toward charter school repair and construction as opposed to traditional public schools. That's really at the heart of this. You're not arguing that part of it, though, right?
No, we're saying that once there is a determination by an elected school board, which is a constitutional body. I mean, the Constitution of Florida says that the voters have the right to elect persons to make a determination as to taxation with regard to school board issues and school issues. We've elected that school board. They've made that determination, and the city council should put the matter on the ballot to be voted up or down.
Laura Heffernan, have you expressed that to your individual city council representative or any of them? What about your voice on this?
Yeah, I mean, I called my city council person is Randy DeFore. I spoke to her over the summer, you know, as it became clear that this looked like it was going to get stalled out. And she had said at the time, you know, that she really didn't feel like she could put it on the ballot until there was a clear plan about when exactly each of these school buildings would be repaired and in which order. And then, you know, when Diana Green and the school board handed over that plan, you know, it was interesting in the late August meeting, you know, Randy said basically, okay, I've got the plan. Our job here is done. She was very clear. Our job on city council is not to make the plan. Our job is to make sure there is one and then put it on the ballot.
Let's go to your calls. What are your thoughts about this? Not only is the Duval County School Board suing the city of Jacksonville, so is a group of local parents and the teachers union, too. So three lawsuits have been filed as the Jacksonville City Council, critics say, has stalled in putting a half-cent sales tax referendum on the ballot before all of you, the voters, to decide whether we should pay more to repair and fix up some of the oldest school buildings in the state of Florida. The whole controversy, of course, stems over whether or not you believe a big piece of that pie should go toward charter schools. Where do you stand on that? It's 549-2937. Tom is on the west side. Hi, Tom. Good morning.
Good morning to you, too. My feeling on this is if charter schools want to be treated the same as traditional public schools, they need to start meeting the same requirements and standards that the public schools are held to. As for the delay that the city council is imposing on repair of these schools, I think it's absolutely unconscionable that they expect our students to go to school and learn in such adverse environments. I think they need to get on the ball and move this forward as soon as possible. I mean, our children can't wait. We don't need to put their futures on hold.
Thanks, Tom. The big push is to get it on the ballot this year, although Ted Delegal, that's That would be a heavy lift at best. So what's the goal here?
Well, the goal is to make sure that it's put on the ballot at some point. The scheduling of when it can be on the ballot, I'm not sure that the judge will be able to get into that issue. Certainly, we want it on the ballot for a reasonable and meaningful time, and that's what we're seeking.
Tell me a little bit more, Laura, about the conditions you've observed at your child's school and some of the other schools that are referenced in the Duval County Schools Master Facilities Plan. They're trying to raise nearly $2 billion through the sales tax referendum over a period of 15 years, mm-hmm. and they're doing it on a square footage basis. Charter school proponents are saying, we want the money to follow each child and the money should be funded on a per pupil basis. That's the divide. So, but tell me what you're seeing in the schools that has motivated you to step forward and file a lawsuit.
Yeah, I mean, if you walk around our son's school, it's very clear that the building needs a lot of work. And then if you go on social media and look around at pictures that other teachers and parents have posted of their schools around the county, you know, it's clear that our school needs a ton of work and is not even the worst.
What do you see there? Give me some examples.
So, you know, like I said, the classrooms that have structural problems with the ceilings and the walls, they've been blocked off and tarped off. So we had to go through Dorian, you know, basically with tarps and plywood around these classrooms and hoping for the best that there wouldn't be a hurricane that would, you know, basically rip out not just those classrooms, but endanger the school in general. There had been flooding issues in the past because of the ceiling. And, you know, like I said, parents, and there's tons of parents at my son's school who are incredibly motivated around this issue. We wrote a whole bunch of us wrote a letter to the Times Union. It was signed by over 70 parents. And many, many more afterwards said, oh, put my name on. Is it too late to put my name on? So, you know, and we know that we're not the worst school in the district. And we know as well that many of these repairs won't happen until after our children are gone from Fishweir. It's not really about that. It's about making sure that this gets done for future kids and for everybody in all the zip codes in the county.
What would you say to parents out there listening who would argue, well, my child goes to a charter school. I chose that because I felt it was best for my kid. Mm-hmm. And I feel that the school I chose, which under Florida law is also a public school, even though critics can sort of split hairs about accountability for charter schools, and that's certainly been a real issue. But what would you say to parents out there saying, well, I feel that the money should be apportioned equally to the school that I chose?
Yeah, I mean, and I have friends who send their kids to charter schools, and we've had this conversation. The current plan that the school board put together does make provision for charter schools in terms of their buildings. So buildings that need structural work like ours will get money as part of this plan on a square footage basis. You know, I think to make it a per pupil basis is distinctly unfair. And the friends
Why
that
is
I
that?
Have, because this is about fixing buildings, you know, and I think what's going on here is that people who run charter schools and invest in them know that they're not going to get a ton of this money because those buildings are pretty new. And so they're trying to carve out a little bit more of this and doing it on this per pupil model.
Ted Dalligal, that's not in your complaint, but do you agree with that argument or not?
Yeah, I think that charter schools are owned generally by investors, and they run these matters. Generally, they rent space or they're not dealing with older school buildings. So I really don't understand the argument so much. The school board has already said that they are going to devote some money to security, which is necessary for all the charter schools and all public schools. But it just seems, you know, I was really perplexed by the length of argument with the city council. The city council just ran the public schools through the ringer. And as you know, I was involved in the pension evaluation. And, you know, compared to that, I mean, they barely blinked an eye when going through the probably the hugest ever expenditure of money in the history of the city of Jacksonville for pensions, for the revision of the pension. And here they ran them through the ringer on matters that were clearly explained and very logical. And it just seems to me that it's sort of an anti-public school effort by the city council, which very much bothers me.
That's how you believe that's their motivation.
I really do. I don't believe this. I mean, the arguments about the charter schools just don't make sense. They're newer buildings. They're generally not owned. I mean, there's not the need there. If there is a need for actual expenditures of funds, the school board has said, yeah, we'll pay for this. But we need to look at where the need is, and we need to devote this money to where the need is.
Critics of the city council's actions have said that they are in the pocket of donors who support the expansion of charter schools. What's your response to that?
I think that's a very real concern. I'm sorry that that's the case, but I really do not believe all these concerns that have been supposedly raised about equality for charter school students.
Laura. Yeah,
I think there's a level of panic among public school parents. That every year that we wait on this is a year that, you know, some parents are going to leave the public schools and go to charters. Our PTA president made comment in the August meeting and said basically that. And I think, you know, when you have people who are in the business of investing in schools that are in direct competition to public schools, that there is a sense that they do at some level maybe want you to fail. And I think that, you know, people are worried about that.
You believe that there's an agenda to make the local school system fail?
Well, I think, you know,
through not funding it properly?
I would say that that is a worry that, you know,
that's
that
a people perception.
Have. Yes, definitely. I think people
and those
get,
on the other side of this would disagree with that, of course.
Oh, of course. And I think that this is like in our darkest hour. We're like, no, do they want this to happen?
Mark is in St. Augustine. Hi, Mark. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. I kind of get the sense of urgency from your guest, and I understand that and appreciate it. I just want to make a comment that shame on this administration, previous administrations, previous school board members and all that stuff for kicking this can down the road, that we're at this point now where you have to have these, you want to call them last minute lawsuits to try and get some action going. I mean, it just shows to me, as far as the school system goes, an overall lack of leadership on both the part of the city and the school board to not address this problem in a more timely manner.
Mark, thanks for that. You know, it's interesting you bring that up because the previous superintendent, Nicolai Vitti, when he appeared on this program during his time here in Jacksonville, he's a superintendent in Detroit now, but when he was on this show, at least three times, I recall him bringing up this issue when he was discussing the Duval County Public Schools and all of the issues that pertain to them. At least three times he mentioned in passing that this bill was going to be coming due and that eventually it was going to come to a head and that it was going to need to be dealt with. And so he left this community before he could deal with it. Most school superintendents don't stay in a city but 3 to 5 years when you look at the statistics. And so it was left to the new superintendent, Diana Green, to deal with this matter. But it is certainly the case that the school board knew for some time that this was going to be a problem. And they, for whatever reason, waited until they had brought in a new superintendent to really make the big push. Tad Delegal, they knew this was coming. Now, he's somewhat critical of waiting till it reached a crisis point, but, you know, the school board might argue otherwise. They might have reasons for why they waited until now. But yeah. Go ahead.
I don't know the reasons. I do know that the school board, the current school board, has done a very good job, and they've rolled this out over almost a year, I believe. They've had a lot of public meetings. They've had a lot of input. They've done this in a very responsible fashion, and I've been very impressed with the leadership of the school board because they've, both Superintendent Green and Lori Hershey, the chair, because they've really tried to respond to all these concerns and these criticisms, so...
Lisa in St. Augustine. Hey, Lisa. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I've been watching this almost like a horror movie unfolding for several years as the Board of Legislature has been siphoning away PICO money and giving it to the charter schools. And I've actually been in Tallahassee in a Senate committee meeting, watched the lobbyists for the charter schools lobbying heavily to continue to get that money while the public schools have not been able to do the same thing. That has just been building and building over several years. And yes, it's a partisan issue. And now it's up to the parents to have to get what by Florida law is supposed to be required, you know, in terms of a quality public education. This is wrong. These parents shouldn't have to be begging for this. I want to hear what they have to say about the theft of the PICO money over the last few years and why it's gotten to this situation that Jacksonville is having to address right now.
Thank you, Lisa. Yeah, a lot of that derives from what's been done in Tallahassee, is my understanding. Tad Delegal.
Well, you know, that's my understanding. There's been a lot of, you know, special efforts to send money to charter schools recently. And it almost seems that there's just this effort to take money away from the traditional schools, to focus spending on the charter schools. Certainly we want kids to be educated, and we want them to if there's public money's being spent, it needs to be spent fairly. Here, I think all the school board is asking is for the facilities that are in the most need of repair to receive the funds that are needed to repair those facilities, whether that be a public school or a charter school.
Okay, lots of emails and tweets about this coming into the show. Stephanie is an Avondale Fishwear parent, and she emails us, "This is absolutely an economic issue and one of reputation. Every year we lose more families to the St. John school system. Along with it follows the tax dollars and revenue streams. So goes the schools, so goes the city," she says, "because would you move to a city with failing public schools and an elected city council that consistently votes against its interests? The optics of this decision by city council are embarrassing," she writes. Meanwhile, on Twitter, folks are calling my attention to a new tweet from the mayor. Mayor Curry tweets out, "Share your school, your classroom, and your need. Email me at mayorlennycurry@coj.net. If your management can't fix basic needs like air conditioning, we will," he says. Here's a tweet from a listener. "The mayor is blaming school board management as he continues to thwart their effort through the council. We are accustomed to this type of Curry slickness and sleight of hand messaging. I applaud the parents bringing suit. I hope it cuts through this mayor's political communications." Okay, Laura Heffernan, what's your response to the mayor tweeting, "Email me directly to get problems fixed at local schools, like your child's school, Fishwear"?
Yeah, I love that line about your management. You know, if your management can't fix it. The city public schools should be the jewel of the city. You know, the mayor should be its management. He should be applauding it. St. Johns County passed a half-cent sales tax to fund their public schools in 2015. And their mayor's office, the county office, build a whole webpage saying, "Thank you so much for passing this. This is wonderful for our county."
Mm-hmm. Tad Delegal, your reaction to the mayor's tweet about this?
Well, I just don't understand it. I don't understand why we're working at cross purposes. If the goal, you know, we've got a good school system. I mean, we were almost an A school system. I mean, and it seems that folks have an interest in just trying to talk it down and claim that we have, that it's lousy or something. And why are we attacking our public school system? That should be the strength of our city. And like Laura said, I mean, St. John's County embraced this same funding, and they did this 4 years ago, and they said, "We need this to have quality schools." Well, let's do the same thing for our county. So we bring the jobs, we bring the businesses, we bring the development, and we don't push it out to the suburbs anymore.
It is notable, too. Can you explain why, for Duval County, this is basically the only funding mechanism for this kind of improvement? There are certain ordinances and local quirks that make this the only option for the school board, as it's been explained to me.
Well, yeah. I mean, the legislature set this up, and they said that this has happened all across the state, that other school districts have passed the same half-cent sales tax because they value their schools, and they know that the schools need this funding source. So I don't understand the reluctance.
Lots more tweets. Jay tweets the show, "It's time to have this fight and make it big. Make the tax used to rebuild schools and the other half to fund extra after-school activities. Expose the people who don't think a child is worth a half penny." Here's a tweet. Ever since Milton Friedman called public education government schools, libertarians have been trying to destroy them. And libertarians have taken over Northeast Florida politics. It's sad. Okay, Laura Heffernan, this is a political issue. Generalizing a bit, but where you fall on this issue sometimes can be along a partisan line, although certainly there are parents out there who don't see it that way. They just pick a school that they like the best for their child. But what about the politics behind this?
Yeah, I mean, I would say that it was really interesting to watch this go through city council over the summer, and a bunch of us parents just really started to pay attention. And there seemed to be about three groups in city council. There was a group of city council people who said, you know, from the get-go, hey, this is not our job. We shouldn't be, you know, we shouldn't be involved in this. And then there was a group like Randy that said, well, we want this, we want to have some good oversight on this. And once we've got it, we're good. And then there were a whole bunch of other folks and that, you know, whose reasons were less clear for stalling it out. And those lines were not R&D lines. Those were not, they didn't break down by political party. And I was kind of interested in that. One of the people who called me back over the summer was Matt Carlucci. And he said, you know, this is crazy. Like he was
another city council person,
not in my district, but he was appalled at how some of his colleagues were acting in city council.
It's certainly a huge controversy and it's going to make its way through the courts now. Tad Delegal, what are the next steps for this complaint?
Well, we filed the complaint. We, at this point, We're waiting to see how the court responds. The court has to issue an order to show cause in order to have a response, and we're waiting for that to happen. So we are moving forward with the process. Hopefully we're going to move forward with some hearings and responses and move the ball forward.
We'll continue to follow it. In the meantime, thanks so much for being here, Jacksonville Attorney Tad Delegal. Avondale Fishware parent Laura Heffernan, part of a group of parents suing the city over funding for schools. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Melissa.
Thanks, Melissa.
And up next, speaking of our schools, a local teacher was removed from teaching after controversy over saying the Pledge of Allegiance in his class. We'll hear from him in a moment, but right now, here's how you can support WJCT.
You can support us right now by calling 904-353-9528. That's because we are in pledge drive right now. You may have heard us start over the weekend, and we're going to be going throughout the week. And the goal is $80,000, which is quite a lot of money. We are definitely not there yet, so we need your help right now. It's 904-353-9528. I'm Lindsay Kilbride. I'm a special projects producer here at WJCT, but you may recognize me from the radio. I used to be a reporter here. And I just am so proud of Melissa. It's been 10 years now she's been on our air, and I can't believe it's been that long, but I kind of can because I was thinking back, and that put me around just starting college, and I remember that was the time that I started really learning a lot about local city government and education issues, which I had no knowledge about previously. I don't even think I knew who the mayor was when I graduated high school, but having a resource like this in the community was something that really got me in tune with, you know, voting in local elections and learning a lot about like how committees work in city council and why those things matter and how these decisions really get made. And I think that's a really great asset we have here in Jacksonville to have a show like this that really breaks down these topics. I mean, you know, you read headlines about the tax issue and is it going to go on the ballot? But having a really in-depth discussion like this is really important to really, you know, maybe you were kind of paying attention, maybe you forgot some of the details. Something like this is a refresher, and it also updates you on what's new going on with a controversial issue like this. So call us now, 904-353-9528. We have a really awesome giveaway. So if you give any amount of money, you'll be entered in to win an Echo Dot. And that's every single day of the pledge drive. We're giving away an Echo Dot. So if you want to get in on that, give us a call right now, 904-353-9528. $10 a month is going to put you at $120 a year. That's going to make you a sustainer. And that's what really, really drives our funding here at WJCT. It's so important that we get those sustainers, those people who are going to be a constant for us at WJCT. We can really count on you to make sure that we're making our goals here. And if you become a sustainer, We also have a great gift. You can either pick between a reusable straw or a great insulated bag, which is, you know, great for fall. Maybe you're bringing in some warm muffins to work. Okay, we're going to get you back to WGCT to First Coast Connect right now, but just one more call out, 904-353-9528. You can also become a sustainer online at WJCT.org, and we thank you.
Thanks so much. Well, September is Hunger Action Month. It's a month where people all over America stand together with Feeding America and their national network of food banks to fight hunger and food insecurity. I recently spoke with Michelle McGriff of Feeding Northeast Florida about how you can help. Let's listen.
Tell us about Hunger Action Month and the work of Feeding Northeast Florida.
Well, throughout September, Feeding Northeast Florida, along with Feeding America and Feeding Florida, is recognizing Hunger Action Month. Hunger Action Month is a month where people all over America stand together to fight hunger. It's a month to take action on the hunger crisis and dedicate ourselves to a solution.
Right. And people might not realize in this era of relatively low unemployment and a strong economy that there are millions of Americans who are what you call food insecure. They don't always know where their next meal is coming from.
Absolutely.
And these are working Americans.
They are. And sadly, many people in our community are food insecure, which means they do not have consistent access to enough affordable, healthy food. And nutritious food is vital.
Just keep going. I'll edit it.
It's vital to health, helping to fight diseases like diabetes, heart disease, and cancer. Without access to healthy, affordable food, people are not able to live productive lives.
Right. If you're worried about how you're going to pay for either food or, say, a car repair, and you have to choose one or the other, mm-hmm. particularly for your children, it can be extremely difficult. There are more than 250,000 people, in fact, in this area that are food insecure. Nearly 30% of those are children. So thousands and thousands of children every day are coming to school hungry. They are on free or reduced lunch programs. They don't have good nutrition, and that means they're struggling in school. They're not hitting their developmental milestones. So Hunger Action Month is really critical to support what is a massive problem. And Feeding Northeast Florida serves a huge area, by the way, something like 13 counties.
Actually, it's eight Northeast Florida counties.
Okay,
yes.
I overspoke a little. But you supply food through your warehouse and your central distribution point to people all over the Northeast Florida region.
Yes, we do. We start far north in Nassau County, and we go as far south as Flagler County, and then we go west to Bradford County, Baker, Duval, Clay, and Bradford.
And I've brought this up before on the show, but we need to bring it up again. If you donate to Feeding Northeast Florida, whether you bring food by, organize a food drive, write a check, you're supporting working people. These aren't people that are asking for a handout of food. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yes. 80% of the people that we serve are the working poor. That means that they go to work, but they don't have enough income to meet all of their basic needs, and food being the most basic need that they're trying to meet. So they're having to choose between child care, between mortgages or rent, between medicine and food. And so what we do is we make sure that they have the basic need, which is food, and they're able to make an easier choice on getting the things that they need most in their household.
This is such an easy cause to support. You can just donate at feedingnefl.org. That's for Feeding Northeast Florida. You also could use volunteers, people that might want to organize a food drive. There's lots of ways to help, right, Michelle?
Yes, volunteers are very important to our organization. We use at least 10,000 volunteers a year, and they make sure that the food that we bring in from our retailers and our farmers, we sort through it to make sure it's great to go out to those who are in need, and they make sure that that's done. And we have two volunteer shifts a day, Tuesday through Friday, from 8:30 till 11:30, and then 12:30 to 3:30, and three Saturdays a month. And if they would like to volunteer, that can be found on our website at feedingnefl.org.
Michelle McGriff, VP with Feeding Northeast Florida, thanks for being here to talk about Hunger Action Month.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you.
Well, a Jacksonville teacher was recently removed from his First Coast High School classroom over a message he wrote to students who didn't stand for the Pledge of Allegiance. Daniel Goodman joins us now for a closer look at what happened and what's next for him. Good morning.
Good morning.
Okay. A message you wrote to your students, your homeroom students, about the pledge went viral. What happened to kick this all off?
Oh, well, it was a homeroom class, and the first week that students came, and so normally I don't have a first period class, and the homeroom comes early in the morning like that, 7 in the morning, 7:15, and so the principal makes an announcement at that time to please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance, and we have a flag in the classroom. So he made the announcement on, I guess, a Monday, and so I stood up and put my hand over my heart and said the pledge. Not one out of about 30, the homeroom was 11th graders, and not one of the kids stood up. And so I was a little surprised. Second day, same thing. Second day, in the homeroom kids, you only have them for about 20 minutes or half hour because you're handing out schedules, things like that, the first week. You hardly ever see homeroom kids, your homeroom kids the rest of the year. But second day, same thing. Not one student stood up. And so the third day, I was thinking, okay, they're going to do the same thing. So I wrote my message on the board, and two kids did stand up. Two out of the about 30.
You got them to stand up. What did you write on the board?
Oh, well, I have the, should I read the, it's,
sure.
It's brief, but
go ahead.
It's a, and I would have probably written it a little differently because I didn't think it would be a controversy, but I could see how it might be. But here's the exact words I wrote. Here are the words. I put, think we had about 500,000 Americans die in our Civil War, which was largely to get rid of slavery. There are no longer separate water fountains and bathrooms in Jacksonville for, quote, white and, quote, colored, as Mr. Goodman remembers from the 1960s. We had an amendment to the U.S. Constitution allowing women the right to vote. We've had a black president. The superintendent of Duval Schools is a black woman. Mr. Fluent, our principal, replaced a black man, Mr. Simmons, who is now a Duval County Public Schools administrator. My point, you're all extremely lucky to be living in the USA. If you refuse to stand during the Pledge of Allegiance or our national anthem, are you revealing maturity and wisdom? Actually, you are displaying the opposite, as some pampered, arrogant celebrities and athletes tend to do. That's what I wrote.
That's what you wrote. And what happened next?
Well, I didn't even think it would be all that controversial, but a student or two, I guess, took pictures with their cell phones, and I was informed by the school that I wouldn't go back to the classroom the next day, and then that Friday, I went to the Consolidated Services Warehouse, where I still am working. I'm still being paid, and I'm still a Duval County Public Schools employee, but I go to Consolidated Services Warehouse on Bulls Bay Highway, and I do some work there, filing and things like that, and that's where I am now. By the way, I'm taking the day off today because I have a doctor appointment later in the day, plus this interview, so I'm on paid leave today, day off.
Okay. What was the school system's rationale for removing you from the classroom? What'd they say to you?
Well, as far as I knew, I don't know the exact terms, but I didn't think it would be a big controversy. I just thought I was stating some facts there, but apparently it got on the news because a parent or two complained, and I don't blame Duval County School Board. I understand they want to avoid controversies. So they sent me over to the Bulls Bay Highway. And by the way, I there are a couple of things I would have changed. I would have said, where I put my point, you are all extremely lucky to be living in the USA. It would have been smarter to put we are all. It seemed like I was picking on them. And the reason I mentioned that we've had about the end of slavery and the no more, because the class, I didn't count people, but I think it was majority African American. And I thought, okay, maybe they don't want to stand for the pledge because they hear from so many people that we're such a racist nation. So I wanted to point out that while we're not perfect, that we've made a lot of improvements. We, you know, and we have had, so I mentioned some prominent African-American people and just said, hey, you can, I was trying to tell kids you can succeed in this world, and it's a pretty good country, not perfect, but pretty good.
Some students and parents found your words offensive and racist. What's your response?
My response is I know I'm not a racist, but you have to be sort of, this day and age, you'd have to be kind of an imbecile to be a real true racist, in the sense that, for instance, whatever you think of his politics, the guy Dr. Ben Carson, before he got started working in the White House, he was the chief, he's a black man, he's chief of pediatric neurosurgery at Johns Hopkins Hospital. Now, that means he did brain surgery on little kids at one of the greatest teaching hospitals in the world. So if you're a racist and you think that, oh, black people are something, you know, why don't you, you know, I would say to the racist, you try and be head of pediatric neurosurgery at Johns Hopkins. In other words, I'm not at all a racist. Before I was at Duval Public Schools, I was at a private, it's mostly black. I say it's a Christian school called Esprit de Corps. It's on the north side. I was there the previous 4 years before I got back with Duval, and the kids, it's like 99% African-American or black kids. And so I know in my heart I'm not a racist. I thought it was just bad for these kids to go through life, you know, disrespecting the flag and thinking that we're such an evil country or some bad country.
Could they have just been not standing for the pledge because they're tired, lazy? I mean, there might have been other reasons why.
That's a possibility. I can't say what's in each person's heart, but the principal got on the radio, on the intercom, very clearly said, "Let's all stand for the Pledge of Allegiance." I'm in my mid-60s. I had the energy to stand up and put my hand on my heart. And so these kids are, 17 or something? They're 11th graders, 16, 17, 18, some maybe even 15, yeah. But, you know, not almost adults. And it just, I think they're getting from somewhere, I think that it's sort of good that this happened to me, even though I didn't seek controversy. I think that this might be typical of teenage kids all around the country, that they're being fed this whole thing by a lot of people. Like, oh, we're such a terrible racist, sexist country. And I think that's incorrect.
But was that why they weren't standing for the pledge?
I would guess so, yeah.
What? Really?
Yes.
You really think that's why they weren't standing for the pledge?
Yes, I do. I don't think 16 and 17-year-olds wouldn't have the physical energy to stand up and put their hand on their heart. I think they were purposely disrespecting the flag.
Do you hope to teach again?
I would be happy to. Interestingly, see, I'm in my mid-60s. I was going to retire this year anyway from full-time teaching. So I'd be happy to go back to the classroom. If not, that's out of my hands. You know, it's actually enjoyable where I am now. I do some work, but it's I'm not suffering and I get paid. But so if I go back, that would be wonderful, but I'm not sure if I will.
Well, we appreciate you sharing your story with us. Thank you, Daniel Goodman, for coming in today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
And in a moment, Cole Pepper, as the Jaguars beat the Titans at home. That's next.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. The Trump administration has been cracking down on illegal immigration, but also legal immigration.
One of the great things about our immigration is that we have welcomed family. We have been diverse in the types of people we pick. And that diversity, I think, is in jeopardy.
We begin a series on changes to legal immigration next time on Here and Now.
This afternoon at 2 here on 89.9 WJCT.
It takes a village, if I might paraphrase, to run a small business.
We have friends. We have friends and neighbors. Because at any given time, either of us may need a piece of equipment, anything. And we really use each other just to get through the night.
I'm Kai Rizdal-Tortillas. Next time on Marketplace.
this evening at 6 here on 89.9 WJCT.
In May 2020, the Florida Historical Society will be hosting a Caribbean conference cruise to San Juan, Puerto Rico, and other islands with historical connections to Florida. I'm Ben Brookmarkle, and coming up on Florida Frontiers, the weekly radio magazine of the Florida Historical Society, we'll discuss those connections, including Spanish explorer Ponce de Leon, astronaut John Glenn, and the Seminole. That's Florida Frontiers, Monday evening at 6:30 on 89.9 WJCT.
How many questions about climate change came up in the 2016 presidential debates? Zero. Times have changed, but a partisan divide on the issue remains deep. How might climate change determine who wins the White House? Part one of our special series, No Plan B. Next time on 1A.
Today at 10 on 89.9 WJCT.
Sports Wrap Up with Cole Pepper is sponsored by Black Sheep, Orsay, and Bellwether Restaurants.
Welcome back. Well, for the first time all year, all of our local teams won on the gridiron over the weekend. She's a pepper, we're a pepper. Wouldn't you like to be a pepper too? Cole Pepper's here now. We'll talk about the Jaguars' victory over the Titans and some other news in a moment. But first, you've got some updates for us about the fate of Jalen Ramsey this morning. What's happening?
The Jalen Ramsey saga continues. Of course, last week, Ramsey had his agent request a trade. He did play on Thursday night. He has not been traded. He has, however, informed the Jaguars that he will not be coming into practice today and maybe not this week. He's sick.
He says
he might have the flu.
Is it one of those blue flus where he's calling out sick to get a better deal for himself?
Listen, maybe he's got the flu. Maybe he does. The timing of this makes it look so childish in a stretch of time where he has been so childish. I had a conversation with Mark Burdell on our podcast that we do, and Mark, I think, best boiled it down in terms of what Jalen Ramsey, why Jalen Ramsey wants a trade. He wants a trade because he got his feelings hurt by the way that Tom Coughlin interacted with him. Now, listen, if it's strictly about the money, fine. Everybody has the opportunity to go and seek a new contract when they have that. Jalen's got two more years left on his current deal, this year and next year, by the way. So no guarantee or reason for the Jaguars to sign into a new contract right now. But he has been the dictionary definition of a diva in this whole thing. And Shad Khan stepped in, according to a report, we haven't been able to confirm this, saying that he wanted Coughlin and Ramsey to work things out so Ramsey could stay. And Khan reportedly says he wants to make Ramsey the highest paid cornerback in the National Football League. Well, let me ask you this. Melissa, you've been around a little bit here in Jacksonville. Do you think Tom Coughlin is likely to change the way that he approaches the business of football?
This is the definition of an irresistible force meeting an immovable object.
Yes, and Tom Coughlin is an immovable object.
Yeah.
So forget about that. And by the way, Jalen Ramsey is completely convinced that he's right in this situation.
Of course.
I found it interesting, though, Melissa, talking to people, hearing from people about where the break is here on who sides with the team and who sides with Ramsey. Because by and large, it's on along age lines. And I'm going to unscientifically put the age break at about 38 years old.
If you're 40 or older, you're on Coughlin's side.
Yeah, you. I mean, listen, doesn't
you
mean
you tend
that,
to see it more his
yes,
way.
Yes, exactly. And it's not about one or the other, but and I can certainly see how both could have some blame. But in terms of the resolution of where this should go, hey, Ramsey wants out. If you're older than 38, you're probably saying, all right, fine.
What if you, let me argue devil's advocate for a minute. A smart person the other day was in here for the media roundtable and commented on this controversy and said, I'm a manager. If I have a star employee I'm having issues with, I work it out.
Mm-hmm. Well, what if the employee doesn't want to work it out?
That's where we are, I guess.
Right. So again, there are a lot of, again, and I'm painting with a broad brush here, younger fans who believe that you have to make Jalen Ramsey happy because he's that kind of a talent. He is playing a position that is important in the National Football League. In this day and age of the passing game, cornerback, a cover corner, is important. But It is not quarterback. He's not a left tackle. He's not a pass rusher. Those are the premium positions in the NFL. If he's a quarterback or a left tackle or a pass rusher, maybe this is different. Certainly if he's a quarterback, things are different here. He's a corner. And there have been a lot of great corners who have not led teams to the Super Bowl.
Well, this is certainly high drama as we follow the epic clash between Jalen Ramsey and Tom Coughlin. We'll continue to see what happens with it this week. In the meantime, it was so exciting to see the Jaguars do so well over the weekend. And Gardner Minshew, of course, has become this cult figure already.
Yeah, as he was at Washington State last year, where he returned this weekend, by the way, to raise the flag before their game against UCLA. Minshew mania has gripped Jacksonville and the nation.
That's right.
We may see a number of jorts walking around, more so than usual, perhaps, in celebration of
the
Jaguars.
Are you going to shave your beard just so you have only a men's stash that you'll be sporting around town? Because I think that could be really significant.
Melissa, isn't the bigger question, is it Gardner Minshew going to grow it all in so he has a Culpepper beard? I'm just going to make sure that that's out there for consumption.
That's a very good point. He needs to be taking his cues from you.
Well, so we had him on our show, on the Mark Brunell show last Monday, and I asked him about the mustache. He said, I said, are you keeping it? He said, oh, yeah. It's
his trademark.
It runs things now.
It has its own zip code.
It's in charge. I just do what it says, and off we go. There's been some great memes as well, utilizing Uncle Rico from Napoleon Dynamite with Gardner Minshew. Great
the
personality.
Memes are unbelievable.
Great personality. And if he keeps playing the way he is, he's going to be more than just a cult figure. He's going to be a hero here in Jacksonville. Help the Jaguars to the win over the Titans. Then you had both the Seminoles. Gators and Bulldogs all win yesterday. So if maybe today, aside from Jalen Ramsey, everybody's in a little bit better mood, it may be because there's a whole lot of winning going on for the teams that people around this part of the world care about.
How about that? That's a nice way to start our Monday off. Thanks for dropping in with your stash and Culpepper beard. Setting the trend.
Starting to feel a little under the weather.
Setting the trend in local sports fashion. Always good to see Culpepper. On tomorrow's show, local residents filing lawsuits against Monsanto, the makers of Roundup. They say that weed killer caused their cancer. We'll tell you about it tomorrow. I'm Melissa Ross. This is First Coast Connect. Thanks for being with us. We'll see you tomorrow morning.
And it is our fall pledge drive right now. The number to call is 904-353-9528. We need your help now. We need to raise $80,000. We're not there yet. So please give us a call right now, 353-9528, or of course, go online to wjct.org. Thank you.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.